Good morning. Nice to be with you. It's nice to be gathered. It's good to be looking at this question this week. Why are we here? It's a big one, isn't it? This question. It's a deep one. It's a serious one. But as you can imagine, as we did ask the Central Coast, what's your biggest question in life, we did get quite a variety of responses. And actually even a whole bunch of really kind of crazy ones. Can I give you a few of them? No. Apparently there's still a good amount of people on the Central Coast for whom their biggest question is, do aliens really exist? Yeah. My personal favourite was one fella who, I'm happy he wasn't serious with this one, but he said his biggest question in life was, how can I kill my ex-wife and get away with it? Not very nice, is it? And I'm hoping he wasn't serious, but yeah, as you can imagine, we got lots of different responses as we asked this question. The one we're dealing with this week, one of the top four, was this one: why are we here? Which is, it's a deep, serious kind of question, isn't it? It's a very ultimate kind of question. It really is the age-old question that humanity, from day dot, has been fascinated with. All the early philosophers, you go through any stretch in period in time, and mankind have been asking this question, what on earth are we doing here? And it seems in 2016 it's still one of the major questions that people have. I think there are certain moments in life that might cause you to pause and ask bigger questions, more ultimate questions, and they can be those transitional moments in life. I do notice like older teens, when they get to the end of high school and they've got to start making decisions about the future, and everyone's asking them, what do you want to do with your life? You know, it can be quite a scary time. Everyone's demanding that you know what you're meant to be doing, and you've got to make decisions about uni. I know that for my wife, that was actually a moment in her life where she thought, yeah, what do I want to do? Is this what we do? We just study and then we do uni or work or and then have a family and kids. Is this it? And it caused her to start asking bigger questions, which wonderfully led her towards discovering ultimate purpose. But it can be those transitional moments. It can be that moment when you're considering whether you'll have kids or when you'll have kids. Most people don't, by the way, I think with that one. Most people just, you're at that point in your life where everyone around you seems to be having kids or trying to have kids, so you're like, oh, well, I guess that's what we do. We just do that next. But every now and then you do get that couple that kind of stop and they go, well, should we? And why should we? In fact, why does anyone have kids? In fact, why are we doing everything we do? You have those kind of moments where you're like, what am I meant to be doing with my life? Yeah, a lot of people have it at that midpoint in their life, the midlife crisis, where they kind of pause and you see that most of your good years are now gone and you think, hang on, have I achieved what I'm meant to be doing with my life? What am I meant to be doing with my life? I don't know. I'll just go and buy a red sports car, you know, or a Harley or something. It can be those transitional moments. However, you can also find yourself asking these kind of big ultimate questions. They can just come kind of out of the blue. They can catch you off guard. You'd be there with your shopping trolley full of food in the middle of the supermarket and all of a sudden you're thinking, why am I doing this? You know? And someone hears you say that and they're like, well, you've got to feed the kids in your house. And you're like, but that's not a big enough answer. It's like, why are we feeding kids? Like, what? Why are we having families? Why are we doing anything that we're doing? And you almost have that out-of-body experience where you kind of drift up above yourself and you look down at your life and everyone's lives and you just see us all scurrying around, busying ourselves, working hard, earning money, spending it, traveling here, going there, full lives. But if you ever kind of look at it from a bird's eye view, you can find yourself thinking, what on earth are we doing? Why are we doing everything that we're doing? That can be kind of a scary question to ask because you might not immediately find a comforting answer. Now, 3,000 years ago, one of the wisest men who ever lived actually did a bit of reflecting on what the point of life is, King Solomon. And we get that recorded for us in the book of Ecclesiastes, or Clickety-Clacksticks, as I used to call it. And he just kind of sits back and looks at life and he goes, oh, the sun comes up and it goes down and comes back again. Now, it doesn't actually go around us. We know we go around it. And he's like, it just keeps going. And the wind blows from here to there. And people are born. And they work hard. And then they die. In fact, whole generations come. and whole generations go, and nothing changes. The world just keeps turning. And he has somewhat of a preliminary conclusion. It just seems a bit meaningless. What is the point of life? It can be kind of scary to ask ultimate questions, especially when the answers are not immediately comforting. It can be so scary that it doesn't surprise me at all that we try to just stay busy and avoid being still and silent. Because when you're still and silent, for just even a small amount of time, you will start reflecting deeply and you'll start asking ultimate questions. I think that's why we're so good at being busy. You know, you ask anyone, how you going? Oh, busy. You know, we're all so busy. We're good at being busy. And we're good at distracting ourselves. We're good at avoiding silence. You know, there's so many things around us where we can be stimulated and entertained by them. You know, there used to be moments where people would just sit in quiet and think for a little bit. People used to do that when they were on the toilet. But these days, we've got phones. And I'm disgusted to hear that most people take their phones to the toilet with them and just waste that little moment of quiet, or relative quiet, that they could be having there. Just checking Facebook, looking at videos. And really, we can be rescued from silence and thinking time so easily with devices that we have these days. You know, you click on one little funny video. I'll watch one, you know. You watch that one funny video, have a giggle. And then now they just keep coming. You know, that's just what they do now. They just keep coming. You don't have to click on another one. And you can just make sure you don't have any quiet time. You can take your phone to bed with you. You can wake up with it. You can just make sure you avoid ever thinking for too long. It's pretty easy, actually. But when we do find ourselves asking ultimate questions, there are answers that our world offers, and there's a couple of common ones. The more honest or extreme atheist or nihilist, your typical Friedrich Nietzsche kind of response, if you ask, what's my purpose? Will say, life has no ultimate meaning. Can you just please stop asking the question? We seem to be pretty fascinated as creatures with asking that question. In fact, we appear to be the only creatures on earth that do continually ask that question. Although I do wonder, you know, how do you know if an elephant's sitting there asking about their own existence? We don't know. But we do know that we do. And some people will say, look, there's no meaning. Stop stressing about that. Just do something with your life. You know? But I think the most common answer that we get from our world that we live in, when you ask, what is my purpose? What is my meaning? The most common answer is this. Just find your own. Just go and find your own purpose. You know, it's different for everyone. We're all unique. What you need to do is discover your own unique purpose and pursue it. You need to understand why you were put here on this earth and do that. But I can't help but to hear that and go, that just sounds so much pressure. I've got to find this one special thing, reason why I exist, and it's got nothing to do with anyone else. It's just special for me. And when you go looking for advice about how you're meant to do that, the advice will be this. Well, the wrong thing to do is to copy anyone else's. So don't define your purpose by copying anyone else's. Don't do that. It's like, oh, great. So I've got to come up with something of my own. And then they say, and don't do anything that anyone else tells you to do. You know, so don't let your purpose be defined by what your parents tell you you should do or what your friends tell you you should do. No, no, no. Just be true to yourself. You've got to go hunting within. We're told to follow our hearts. We're told to basically just do whatever feels important to you. That's how you discover your own purpose. It might be making music. It might be making money. It might be making babies. It might be feeding the poor. It might be teaching children. Just you go, you live your dream, whatever it might be. It's like those Choose Your Own Adventure books. They're the books I used to read when I was a kid, or some of the books. Remember those books? You get to a point in the book and there's a decision to make. You can either, you know, run through the tunnel or swim across the river. If you run through the tunnel, you've got to go to page 59. If you swim across the river, you've got to go to page 302. And I would be always like, I don't know. So I'd go to 59 and 302 and I'd read there. But then there'd be another decision. I mean, you got two other places. So I'd be using all my fingers, digging into the book, going, I'm just stressing me out. I don't know which one to choose. I want to pick the best one. I don't want to choose the wrong adventure. I want to get the right adventure. And I feel like it's a little bit like that when we get told, you got to choose your own purpose. That's what our world says. You choose your own purpose. It sounds nice. It kind of makes sense in the world we live in, where it's the world of options. But it can be quite stressful. We get told to design our own lives. And we're used to growing up in a world where you can create and craft your own career, your own family unit, whatever you want that to look like, your own lifestyle. And we get told your own purpose. Figure out your own purpose. But the question I'm left with is this. Is that okay? Is it okay for us to choose our own purpose based purely upon what makes sense to us, what feels important to us? Is that okay to do? Our world says, absolutely. You crack open the Bible and you ask Jesus what he says, and he says, oh, be very, very careful how you define your purpose, because you can totally get it horribly wrong. So Luke chapter 12, come there with me in your Bibles on that piece of paper. And here, friends, is an example where Jesus meets a man who is getting his purpose wrong. He's defined his purpose in a very particular way. Jesus sees it and gives him a very, very stern warning to not keep doing that with his life. Have a look at verse 13 there. Here's the context. Jesus has got a crowd in front of him. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." So someone in the crowd is making a request of Jesus. There appears to be some type of dispute between the inheritance. Never heard of that before, have you? There's a dispute between inheritance for the siblings, and they're asking Jesus to actually kind of help make a verdict, help them mediate the decision. Now, it seems like a reasonable request. The guy's concerned about his own personal finances. He doesn't want to miss out. And so he comes and he asks the local rabbi, which was the pretty typical thing to do in the first century. You go to your local rabbi. He'll help you sort out disputes. But you can see by the way Jesus responds that Jesus doesn't consider himself to be just your typical rabbi who's interested in these kind of disputes. Look at verse 14. Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" You know, I've got no intention of being the executor here in the will. Don't drag me into this. It's actually not what I'm here for. And then Jesus gives him, he goes deep with the man. And he goes right to the core of the issue. Look at verse 15. Then he said to them, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." If that's not a word that we need to hear in our generation, I don't know what is. Be careful of greed, all kinds of greed. Be on your guard. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. It's not about materialism. Now, what Jesus is doing here is he's kind of looking beneath the surface of a relatively reasonable request. The guy's just asking him for help. But Jesus sees beneath that. He sees into this man's life. He goes right to the heart of this man and he can see a big issue. He sees that this man's heart is effectively gripped with greed. He's obsessing over possessions. And Jesus effectively sees that this man is defining his purpose in a very particular way, and it's in this way: accumulate possessions. That's the big thing to him. Jesus sees that's what's going on for this guy. He's finding security, finding purpose, finding meaning by just trying to gather possessions for himself. And Jesus warns him very sternly. Look what he says. He says, "Watch out. You know, be on your guard." And he kind of says it to everyone who's standing there in front of him. Notice what Jesus doesn't do. Jesus doesn't say, "Oh, each to their own. If that's how you want to define purpose in your life, you go for it, mate. I'll give you a bit of advice, but you know, otherwise, you know, that's okay, go for it." No, he doesn't say that. He says, "No, don't do that with your life. That's not what it's about. You're getting it wrong." And then he drills home that point with a story. Jesus tells a parable, and he often does this if you're new to the scriptures. Jesus often tells parables, which is a story to help drill home a point. And the point is to warn this guy that he's defining purpose in a fatal way, in the wrong way. And so have a look at the story there with me. Verse 16, Jesus begins to tell the parable. And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. So that's a pretty easy story to get your head around. Jesus says, there's this wealthy farmer guy, and he happens to have another bumper crop, and he ends up with more grain, effectively more wealth than he knows what to do with it, and he's stuck with a bit of a dilemma. How do I store it? Where do I put it? My barns are not big enough for the wealth that I've got. It's the kind of dilemma that most of us dream about having at least once in our life. What do I do with all my money? I don't know. I don't know where to put it, you know. I've got no room for it. This guy ends up solving his own dilemma quite quickly, verse 18, in a way that our world would say, yep, good on you, mate. Wise. Verse 18, then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And look at this, I'll say to myself, and we say things to ourselves, not usually out loud, but we do talk to ourselves, and it drives a lot of what we do. And look at what he says to himself. Here's what's important to himself. You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. So the way he solves his dilemma is just to figure out another way to store more of his wealth for himself. And really what he's got in mind is this next season of life, we call it retirement, and he's thinking, this is good. I'm now just going to be able to sit back, live it up, and just indulge myself with all the wealth that I have. And I actually think, you know, some of the original people who would have heard Jesus tell this story would have been thinking, yeah, good call, good idea. That's what I'd do, just figure out new ways to store up more wealth. If you've got more than you need, just figure out new ways to structure it. And basically, so you've got plenty for yourself. You don't have to work much anymore. And I think people in our society, many would agree and say, yep, that's wise. That's smart. Jesus then drops the verdict of what God thinks, and it's the exact opposite. It's just two thumbs down and a whopping big raspberry. You know? You know, that's what a raspberry sounds like. Yeah, you got it wrong. Have a look at what he says here, verse 20. But then God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? So God's verdict is foolish. And it's foolish for a number of different reasons. It's foolish because he's just been incredibly self-centered. We all know that's foolish. But it's foolish because he's basically just spent his entire life saving up for a time that he's not even going to get to experience. He's defined his purpose in life focused on this season that he's not even going to get. And God goes, that's dumb. You can't control what's in the future. You don't even know it's coming. So to spend your whole life on something you can't control, that's silly. Verse 20 gives us kind of the conclusion. This is how it will be for those who store up things for themselves but are not rich towards God. So how to get your purpose wrong, 101. The big mistake to make is spend your life storing up things for yourself and fail to ever, Jesus says, be rich towards God. Now there's one whopping big point that we've got to hear from this parable that Jesus tells. There's a number of points, but I think one big one. Let me give it to you. It's blatantly obvious, but so important for us to hear. You can get your purpose wrong. Here's one example. To focus your life on gathering possessions for yourself, to pursue materialism, is how to get your purpose wrong. But that's just one way. Our world says, look, just choose your own purpose, do whatever feels right. Basically, you can't get it wrong. You just do it. And Jesus says, no, you can get it wrong. Don't do whatever makes sense to you because you can end up wasting your life, wrecking your life entirely. So you can get it wrong. So if we can get it wrong, how do you get it right? What should define purpose for us? How are we meant to determine meaning in our life? Well, there's a principle that lies beneath this passage, but is right throughout Scripture, and I want to suggest the principle is this. Let your purpose be defined by your Maker. Let your meaning be determined by the one who created you. You see, we have been made by someone. and that someone had a purpose for our existence. If we had made ourselves, if we had given life to ourselves, then we would have the right to go ahead and determine our own purpose for ourselves. That would be okay. But if someone else has made us, if someone else has created us, they've done it with a purpose, because that's why anyone makes anything. You do it with a purpose in mind, and it just makes sense, doesn't it, to go and ask the one who made us why he did it. You can see in this passage, it's kind of embedded, but you can see in this passage evidence that there is a maker of us. Have a look at verse 20 and look at the language that's used. But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you." He doesn't just say, "Tonight you're going to die." He says, "Tonight your life will be demanded from you." Now that language implies something, doesn't it? It implies that there's someone who's going to demand this man's life. There's someone who's actually going to take this man's life. And it's the same someone who gave it in the very first place. You know, the Bible just presents to us consistently this truth that we have a maker, a creator, who gives us life and therefore has the right to take it back as well. We've got a maker, we've got a creator. And the passage even gives us indication that we've got a sustainer as well. Look at verse 16. "And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest." How does the rich man get his abundance? Now, no doubt he works his ground. He's a farmer. But the language of this verse tells you that it's the ground that yields the abundance. It's something else that actually gives him the abundance. And I would even say it's someone else behind the something else that actually is the giver. So that really he is the receiver. You know, beneath all of the scriptures and even explicit in other places, definitely, you know, we keep getting told you've got someone who made you, you've got someone who is sustaining you. It makes sense, doesn't it, to go to them and ask them, "Why have you made us? Why am I here?" Now, we get how that principle works in everyday life. We get how that works for us, don't we? Because you make things, you build things. And whenever you do that with a purpose in mind, don't you? Think about the things that you've made. You make a cake. What's the purpose? Someone can eat it. It's someone's birthday. You build something. You do it for a reason, and it makes sense to ask the maker. But what happens when you actually build something or make something and then it's used for a purpose that it wasn't intended? It's wasted, isn't it? Even wrecked somewhat. And I want to illustrate that point for you here this morning. I was planning to bring something along, but I haven't done that. But as I was looking, I thought there are some things behind me that I could use to illustrate this point. See, we've got some things here on stage that have been built, yes? And they've been built for a very specific purpose. And we've got musical instruments here. And we all know why musical instruments have been built, why they've been made. And I'm just having a little look around, and I'm thinking, I just want to make this point, I want to illustrate. This guitar here is Phil's. I'm just going to look for Phil. Do you mind if I... You'd rather not? He doesn't want me to touch his guitar. He doesn't trust me. What about that one? You don't know whose this one is, do you? I'll be careful. So this guitar here, you and I know it's built with a very specific purpose in mind. It's built to, you know, just make beautiful music. Now let me illustrate. I can't. Okay, I can't play it. Let's just think for a minute. I'm a fool. You tell me that this is designed for a very particular purpose and it is to make beautiful music. You say that to me and I go, "Nah, I don't reckon. I don't think that's its purpose." I look at it and I go, "You know what I reckon it looks more like?" And I come up with my own purpose. What could happen to this thing that's built to make music? Well, you could wreck it, couldn't you? So let's pretend I do that. Let's say I look at this and I think, "No, I actually reckon this looks almost like a, I don't know, you could use it for a bunch of things. It looks like a coat hanger or something you could hang clothes off. You could put the coat hanger hanging off this and just hang off the strings, yeah? You could do lots of things with it. In fact, when I look at it, I think, actually, this looks like a piece of sporting equipment. Don't you reckon? Now, I know it's January, but January is just tennis month, isn't it? And I'm thinking this looks like a tennis racket. It's got strings. It looks like a tennis racket. You could picture that, couldn't you? Just give us a little serve here. Feeling nervous? It's okay. I'll look after it. All right, there you go. See? That could work, couldn't it? Or cricket bat. Are you reckon? Summer of cricket, we do that as well. Just, hey? Just a little bit of cricket. You've got to be careful, don't you? You want to get the purpose right. Now, let's say, for instance, I go, no, you know what this is for? I know what this is for. This is a trampoline. Yeah. I'm looking at this thing thinking you could get some bounce out of that. You reckon? And I go, let's do this. I could put this on here. And I actually reckon you could get on that and you just go, boing, and just give yourself a really good bounce. And I'm believing that that's what this is for. So I get up on here. And you guys are thinking, he's not going to do it, is he? I am. And I go, I'm going to jump. I am so sorry. I cannot believe that just happened. Now, just for those of you who are really freaking out right now, this is not anyone's guitar, okay? It was already broken, found on a rubbish heap, unusable. Trust me, calm down, it's okay. His heart's been like, oh my God. So don't worry about it. But you know what? If you're sitting there feeling horrified about what I just did there, especially if you appreciate music, right? I'm sorry, but that is actually how I want you to feel. It actually makes sense to be horrified when you see something good that gets wasted. It's right to be horrified when you see something that's precious get wrecked. You can see my point here, can't you? What is more precious than your life? But if you use your life for the wrong purpose, friends, you will waste your life, you will wreck your life, and friends, that is more horrific than any musical instrument, your life. You've got to get the purpose right. And the way to get the purpose right is to listen to the maker, listen to the designer, not think that it's valid to just go, you know what it looks like to me, here's what I'm going to do with it, here's what makes sense to me, because you can get it wrong. And you will waste and you will wreck your life. So what is our purpose? What is our purpose as defined by the one who made us, the one who designed us? It makes sense to ask him. Well, friends, we do have, all of us together, we do have one common ultimate purpose for life. And we're going to get to it. But underneath that purpose, I do want to acknowledge something. The Bible does acknowledge that we're different. It does acknowledge our individuality, our uniqueness. We are all made differently in some sense, with different wiring and passions and gifts and strength. And we are to live enjoying those. But we live out our uniqueness under one common purpose for all of us. What is it? Well, you can see it in the passage here. Look at verse 21. It isn't given to us in a completely detailed way, but what is given to us here certainly points us very helpfully in the right direction. Look at those last three words in verse 21. We're told in verse 21, how to get your purpose wrong is to actually spend your life storing up things for yourself. But we're given indication here in the right direction that really life is about being rich towards God. Rich towards God. You know, which kind of literally means generous towards him. Using what you have for him. Now, there's a sense in which we kind of expected that anyway at a general principle. You know, many will read this story about this man who pursues materialism for himself. Most of us read that and think, oh, come on, that's just silly. You know, most people, we suspect anyway, don't we, that life is not about things, it's about people. Yeah? Life is not about materialism, it's about relationships. We get that. But isn't it interesting how Jesus puts it here? You almost expect him to, after observing this man who's gathering everything for himself, you almost expect Jesus to finish by saying, don't store up things for yourself, instead be rich or generous towards others. You expect him to say that, don't you? Because that would be true. Life is ultimately not just about you, it's about people. But Jesus takes us further. He doesn't just take us and point us and say it's about others. He takes us to one particular other, the most significant other, the most important relationship. He points us to our God. He points us to our Maker, our Sustainer, and he says it's actually about him. The ultimate purpose in life is being rich toward him, using what you have for him, relating well to your God, your Maker. All other relationships are important, absolutely, but there's one that is of ultimate importance that actually defines your purpose, and you've got to make sure you get that right. In fact, when you think about all the relationships you have in your life, acknowledging that they're all important, but there's one that's of ultimate significance. It's almost like this. It's almost like all the other relationships, friends, family, spouse, kids, they're all important, but there's a sense in which they are meant to whet our appetite for one particular relationship. There's a sense in which all of your relationships, as important as they are what I would say, an appetizer for the real one. Now, when I say appetizer, you know how appetizers work, don't you? You go to someone's house where they're feeding you, or there's a caterer that's doing appetizers. Appetizers are the little things that are brought out first. They're important, they're nice, but they're the little things that are meant to be pointing you towards the big thing that's coming. Now, went to a wedding on the weekend. Love going to weddings, especially when there's great catering at the wedding and it was done very well. And the first few things that came out, those appetizers, geez, how good. There's a little meatball here. Ooh, that's nice. But you're like, ooh, I wouldn't mind some more of that. It just kind of just whets your appetite for what's next. And a little bit of squid. It's all, oh, that was a bit better. And they just keep bringing it out. And what they're doing is they're whetting your appetite. They're pointing you forward. They're causing you anticipate the main course that's coming, the piece de resistance that's on its way. And geez, that was done really well. Finally, this big thing came out that just, oh, it's just so good. And you're sitting there thinking, Dad, this is what weddings are all about, isn't it? When the main course comes out, there it is. Friends, here's what we're being told really is that relationships are all important, but there's a case in which that they are just appetizers for the one ultimate relationship that we exist for, and that is to know our God, our Maker. The trouble is, we can just get caught up on the appetizers completely. You can just have your head in the nibblies bowl. You can just be stuffing yourself with the chips and the nuts, thinking, man, this is a bit disappointing, you know? And all the while, they're just meant to be pointing you. They are important, our relationship, but there's one that's of ultimate importance. It's meant to be pointing us there. Have you got that sorted? Because that is where purpose and meaning comes from, being in relationship with the one who made you. Jesus says it really explicitly when he's asked. He's asked in one situation, you get in Matthew chapter 22, what's the first and most important commandment? Which is really similar to what's the purpose of life? What's the big thing? And he says this, Matthew chapter 22, 37, he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And the second, this is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbour as you love yourself. You see, we are called to love our neighbour. You are called to love all those around you. All the relationships in your life are important, but there is one that's primary. The first and greatest command is to love the Lord your God. It's to know your Maker, love your Maker, live richly toward your Maker. Friends, that's it. That's how purpose is defined. So do you know your God? Do you love God? Good thing is Jesus doesn't just leave it there, because that is to leave it quite general, isn't it? You tell people in our world, just make sure you know God. And maybe some of you are sitting there thinking, which God? Any God? my God? And do I have to love him in a particular way, or is that open to whatever path I want to take to know my God? Well, Jesus very helpfully gets even more specific on a number of other occasions, but one classic occasion where Jesus just brings it all down and says, I'll tell you how to know your God. I'll tell you how to love your God. I'll tell you how to get into your purpose and your meaning. It's John chapter 14. You might want to open to that, otherwise it's going to come up on the screen. John chapter 14, verses 5 and 6. You know, Jesus says these classic words, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father, that's God, no one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. How can Jesus say from now on, you know God and have seen him? Jesus can say that because he is standing in front of them. And he's saying, the key is me. I am God the Son. So the way to know God the Father is to know me. It's all about me. The way you get to know him is through me. The way you get to see him and love him is through me. The way you get to be with him, get to him, is through me. Jesus, I'm the way. I'm the truth. I'm the life. It's a little bit offensive to say in our day and age because it claims exclusivity. The only way to know God is through Jesus. But this is the very heart of Christianity. Jesus doesn't leave it general. He gets down to the details. He says, here's the deal. There's a cafe down at Wombrell that it's been there for a number of years. It used to be called iBar. And it's called something else now, but I still call it iBar. You know how you get stuck on calling something its old name because it was significant to you then. Anyway, Helen, who runs that one, she every day writes on the blackboard out the front of the cafe a new little inspiring message. Some of them are good, some of them make me giggle. She wrote one up the other day that, I know Helen, she's lovely, and she wrote one up the other day that said this, get some meaning in your life. Get some meaning in your life. And I agree. I'm with her. Get some meaning. You want to make sure you have meaning, purpose, significance. But my question is this, will you allow the one who made you to define it? Will you allow the one who created you to determine your meaning and purpose? Because he's been quite clear. You see, we come with instructions. We come with a very clear labeling. Here's what you're for, God says. You're for me. That's why I made you. You're built for me. You exist to know me and love me and live with me and live for me through Jesus. That's your purpose. And it's our choice what we do with that. We're genuinely able to make decisions in our life as to how we want to define purpose. You can actually hear your Maker say that through his word, and you've got a choice what you do with it. You can hear it, and maybe some of you are hearing it for the first time this morning, and you're sitting there thinking, nah, because you've got a choice. You think, nah, I don't think that's what I'm here for. You can say, nah, I think I'm here for, and you can just go ahead and define it your very own way. You can choose your own purpose. And you can even end up living for many years in life feeling like it's working. You know, for a little while there when I was on that guitar, you know, it did look like a trampoline, didn't it? It never really did, but to me it did. Felt good. I thought I might get a few bounces out of the thing. You can even pick the wrong purpose and you can hit a ball with it. You know, it can feel good for a bit, but the problem is in the end, we're all going to stand before our Maker, the one who created us. And I tell you what, if you've ignored what he says about your purpose, it will be a very awkward day where he looks at us and he says to all those who thought they could define their own purpose, whichever, who look at you and say, you fool. You've wasted your life. You've wrecked your life. And in fact, it never was your life. I generously entrusted you with life. I loaned you some life for a particular purpose, and that was so that you'd know me. And there is nothing better than knowing me and loving me. That's why you're here. But you wasted your moment. and you wrecked yourself. You can do that. You can hear what God's got to say and you can say, nah, I choose to think this way. Or you can hear it and you can accept it and you can delight in it and you can go after your maker with all of your strength, with all of your days. And here's something wonderful that can happen. It doesn't matter how long you've lived ignoring what he says about your purpose. It's never too late to turn and actually accept what God says. And if you're someone who's been living for your own purpose for many years, and particularly if you're someone who is noticing it's not working like you hoped, in fact, there's been a bit of damage as you've defined your own purpose. Maybe you're even feeling as damaged as this puppy. You know, you're thinking, whoa, I'm not sure that I'm repairable. I think what I've done with my life has caused so much harm, I'm done. Here's the beautiful thing. Our God is in the business of repairing broken people. You come to him and turn to him and God does amazing things. I can't really illustrate that right now, but you know, trust me, God is able to get ruined, broken people who have been wrecking themselves and we're all good at doing it and put us back together in the most remarkably beautiful way and restore us. And friends, if you haven't yet come to God, you need to come to him and allow him to restore you and keep you and hold you and cause you to live with him forever. That's what he's got. That's what he's got. And I tell you what, to live in this life, knowing what you're here for is such a wonderful thing. We're going to get into it next week when we look at, you know, happiness and contentment. But I tell you what, there's nothing better than knowing why you're here and living with a confidence that your purpose is being fulfilled, that you know the meaning of your existence, the whole reason why you're alive on earth. Because you know your maker and you're loving your maker and you're learning more and more to offer yourself to him and be rich towards God. I'm going to leave it there and I'm going to pray. So please pray with me. Father God, we are so grateful that you have not been silent. You've spoken in many and various ways through history and most particularly through your son Jesus. Thank you so much that we have your word that we can open and we can ask ultimate questions and get answers, clear answers. And the answer to this one, that we exist to know you and love you and live with you. Father, we see that that's how you began all of this with our first parents in the garden. You would come and you would walk with them in the cool of the evening. We see, Lord, that we exist to walk with you. We long to be settled and content knowing our purpose and our purpose for our existence. Father God, would you help us as we keep running after many different things, as we stray and think in our own pride that we can define it however we want? Would you help us to see the damage and ruin that we bring as we do that? And Lord, would you please be merciful to us and enable us to repent and turn to you and put our trust in you and delight in you like we should. Amen.